This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Debbie Elliott. In a few minutes, we'll take a closer look at some news of the day, including international talks on global warming and preparations for the election in Iraq. And we'll have an appreciation of comedian Richard Pryor, who died today. But first, we take note of another death today. The Associated Press reports that former Senator Eugene McCarthy died in Washington at the age of 89. Born and raised in Minnesota, McCarthy was a teacher before he entered politics. He served 10 years in the House of Representatives and 2 terms in the United States Senate. He gained national recognition when he challenged President Lyndon Johnson over the war in Vietnam. NPR's Neil Conan reports.
Eugene McCarthy was a most unlikely presidential candidate. Scholarly, modest, enigmatic, his oratory was as low-key as his personality. Yet he humbled one of the most accomplished politicians of the 20th century and changed American history. In November of 1967, the relatively obscure senator from Minnesota announced he would fight incumbent President Lyndon Johnson for the Democratic nomination. He acknowledged afterwards that he held out little hope of actually defeating Johnson. His purpose was to overcome what he called the sense of political helplessness of those opposing the war in Vietnam.
To some extent, we have come close to despair, replacing the hope which characterized the America of 1961 and 62 and 63. And failure in war has come to replace the successes we were beginning to gain in the field of peace.
To McCarthy's surprise and Johnson's, the campaign caught fire. A previously diffuse and argumentative anti-war movement coalesced around Eugene McCarthy, and a new generation of political activists went door to door asking for votes in the New Hampshire primary. Young people who took off their beads and cut their long hair to go clean for Gene. In March 1968, McCarthy's Children's Crusade embarrassed Lyndon Johnson by winning 42% of the vote. While the president did win, that primary prompted one of the most dramatic announcements in American politics.
I shall not seek, and I will not accept, the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
Vice President Hubert Humphrey entered the race, and so did another anti-war candidate, Senator Robert F. Kennedy. Many in McCarthy's camp regarded Kennedy as an opportunist, but the younger brother of a murdered president had experience, wealth, and it seemed destiny on his side. But Robert Kennedy was himself assassinated minutes after he won the California primary in June, leaving a weakened Eugene McCarthy to lead the anti-war crusade to the Democratic Convention in Chicago.
The 35th Quadrennial Convention of the Democratic Party of the United States is now called in session.
While McCarthy and Kennedy had taken 80% of the votes cast in the presidential primaries, the votes that counted in those days, those of the convention delegates, belonged to Hubert Humphrey. Thousands of frustrated demonstrators flooded into Chicago to hold a raucous counter-convention, which turned into a series of bloody confrontations with the Chicago police.
Gentlemen, get the thing straight once and for all. The policeman isn't there to create disorder. The policeman is there to preserve disorder.
Mayor Richard Daley's famous malapropism came amid what was later described as a police riot in Chicago. Scenes of helmeted cops clubbing protesters, bystanders, and reporters overwhelmed the proceedings inside the convention hall.
The chair declares that Vice President Hubert Humphrey is the Democratic president candidate of the United States.
Speaking through a bullhorn outside the Hilton Hotel in Chicago, Eugene McCarthy issued a concession, but not an endorsement.
I think we proved something about the people of this country. They made a judgment which the politicians were afraid even to face up to before we took it to the people. They were that in the midst of this war, they were ready to say that we were wrong and that the policy ought to be changed. That was the judgment of the people of this country.
Hubert Humphrey was never able to overcome the debacle of Chicago or heal the split in the party, but he made the election close enough that many would blame Eugene McCarthy for the defeat.
The only thing I kind of resent is people who were for the war will say, "Now, don't you feel guilty about, you know, Richard Nixon's election?" I said, you know, Johnson won by, I think it was 18 million votes in 64. Don't you feel guilty at having thrown away an 18 million differential between 64 and 68?
McCarthy ran again in 1972, but his moment had passed and subsequent presidential campaigns became increasingly marginal. He even endorsed candidate Ronald Reagan in 1980. Still, 1968 had profound effects. McCarthy's campaign transformed the nominating process, which now centers on binding primaries, and it helped change the character of the Democratic Party, bringing in the peace and civil rights movements, though alienating many conservatives, especially in the South. And some of the kids inspired by Eugene McCarthy stayed in politics, helped organize the peace movement and the environmental campaigns. In 1993, NPR's Leanne Hansen asked Eugene McCarthy what he thought of that generation so many years later.
Well, I don't know. None of them really rallied to me this last year. I had to tell them that they were probably right. You know, in 68, they said, don't trust anybody over 30 and under 50.
Well, that's... now it's don't trust anyone over 60, right?
over 50 is all right. But, yeah, they have to... But, so they were caught. It may be sort of part of our sort of socioeconomic culture in that... You know, when you get over 30, you got to start worrying about your profession. You got to worry about your job, and you have to worry about your family. So I'm kind of hoping that the Clean for Gene crowd, when they get past 50 a little bit more, we revert to what they were before they became 30.
Over the last decades of his life, Eugene McCarthy lectured and taught. He wrote books on foreign policy and the philosophy of government and two volumes of poetry. Critics treated the verse more kindly. One of McCarthy's poems recalls the view out of his hotel room window in August 1968, overlooking Chicago's Grant Park.
Morning light on the pale lake, plastic helmets. On August, leaves of elm on grass, on boys and girls in sleeping bags, curled in question marks. Asking the question of the guitar and the song, the question of the fountain, the question of the bell, the question of the red balloon, the question of the kite, of the flowers, and of the girl's brown hair in the wind. There are no answers in this park, said the captain of the guard. Then give us back our questions, said the boys and girls. There are no questions in this park. The balloon is broken. No one sings. The fountain has been drained. The tongue is gone from the bell. All kites have fallen and hang upside down. Telephone wires or trees like St. Andrew crucified. The flowers have faded. The guitar is smashed and no one sings. And no hair blows in the wind.
Neil Conan, NPR News, Washington.